This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:08. You're listening to the evening edition with Lynn. And we're starting off the show with the fact that the Prime Minister has announced or said that there is a possibility that the Klang Valley will be moving on to phase two of the National Recovery Plan. So we want to find out if we're truly ready. And essentially, the reasoning behind this is that our COVID vaccination rates has exceeded 80%. And in fact, according to the Special Committee for Ensuring Access to COVID-19 Vaccine Supply, or perhaps better and more succinctly known as JKJAV, 90.3% of adults in the Klang Valley have actually been fully vaccinated as of yesterday. And this is 66.1% of the total population of Malaysia. It is worth noting, though, that they do use 2010 census data for their calculations. So there is a possibility that that 90.3% is an overestimation. As we know, getting accurate information, getting accurate up-to-date information from the census has been a bit of a challenge. But if we come back to this idea of moving on to phase two, this matter is going to be finalised in the Special Committee to Address COVID-19 meeting with the Cabinet, which is chaired by the Prime Minister. So we're waiting on that announcement. It does, however, come after, anyway, the government has already eased restrictions for fully vaccinated individuals in phase one states. You may remember that we spoke about that before. It included things like what we're seeing now, right? People being able to dine in, for example, people being able to go to parks, retail, that sort of thing. And if we look at what phase two would mean, further economic activities would reopen, 80% of workers will be allowed on site, and the government will allow will add more sectors to the current list of companies that are able to operate. So cement manufacturing to support construction, sales of computers and electronic devices to cater for people working at home. But we are still not going to see social activities and interstate travel, although I imagine, from what I'm recalling, inter-district travel may be permitted, but we will look that up. Anyway, I think the central question here is, do you feel we're ready? So we may be moving on to phase two fairly soon. We know that a fair amount, a significant amount of people in the Klang Valley have now been fully vaccinated. And in fact, the Health Director General did say on Facebook that the rising rate of vaccinations in the Klang Valley is showing positive signs. There is a downtrend of COVID-19 ICU admissions in Klang Valley Hospital. Sungai Buloh Hospital itself has seen a decline in category 4 and 5 patients. So in terms of easing the burden on our healthcare system, we are seeing some rewards. But again, there are other worries, I think, that factor in here. So we want to hear from you. In general, do you think that we're ready for a further loosening of restrictions in the Klang Valley? As the Prime Minister says, we may be ready to head to phase two. Call us 7733 2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Dr. Farhan Rusli, Director of the Selangau Task Force for COVID-19 Operations. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It is 5:12. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, and we're talking today about the possibility that the Klang Valley is going to move on to phase two of the National Recovery Plan. So we're in phase one, but there has already been a loosening of restrictions. Phase two, of course, would mean further loosenings, further down the path towards heading back to normal, I suppose. And that really is the question. So this is based on the fact that our COVID vaccination rates within the Klang Valley has exceeded 80%. We'd like to hear from you. Do you think we're ready for this further loosening of restrictions here in the Klang Valley? That number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. You can also send us any questions you might have, because joining us now, we're crossing over to Dr. Farhan Rusli, Director of the Selangor Task Force for COVID-19 Operations. Dr. Farhan, as always, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks, Lynn.
So I wanted to get your thoughts on the possibility of us being moved to the next phase of the NRP. What do you think?
Well, I think moving to the next phase of NRP, we have to look back at what phase we are currently now. So when the government actually announced of easing of restrictions for phase one, it becomes absolutely confusing because right now there seems to be very little to no difference between phase one, two and three. So moving to phase two, it means necessarily very little because if you look at it in the granular form, the number of restrictions seems very minute. In comparison to what we're having now, because as of now, those in phase one, they are quite free, actually. Mm. And that is something that is very, very worrying.
And the rationale here is that we've exceeded that 90% mark of fully vaccinated individuals in the Klang Valley. We're also seeing, however, daily cases continuing to be in the 5,000 to 6,000 range, at least locally. Do you think that we're ready for this?
Well, I think the first thing, Lynn, if you would allow me, is to actually draw your attention to the 90% vaccination rate in Greater Klang Valley. First of all, that number is based on the denominator, which is not actually quite real or something that's accurate, because that denominator is based on a census that was done a couple of years back based on local Malaysian population that's registered. Now, as you know, the number of vaccinations that's being given is being counted from the point of given, which means that it's the people who have gotten vaccinations at the vaccination centre. So when the AstraZeneca vaccine rollout, when they opened up the lottery for 1 million vaccines, so you had a lot of people who were actually from out of state who actually came into Selangor and KL to get their vaccinations done. So now if you look at the foreign workers and the illegal workers and the illegals who are in the country, they are also part of the number that makes up the so-called 90%. But if you look at it in reality, I do not think that number will be 90%. I think it's closer to 60% from my estimation because of our, I guess, untruthful denominator that we're using for the calculation. And that's what's worrying me.
Mm, and I wanted to ask if you could expand on that. So there's a difference there of about 30%, right, estimated. And
correct.
What does that actually mean for us in practice?
Well, the thing is this, when you talk about 90% vaccination rates, I mean, you have a high number that's already vaccinated. So you know that you're moving towards closer to herd immunity. But if we look at it from the real numbers, let's say it's closer to 60%, then you know that not everybody is actually protected. And this would actually explain why there is still a high number of people who are still being reported as positive. Because if you say that they have a high rate of vaccinations, but yet the number of cases are still increasing, but they are actually not breakthrough cases. That means the number of population that you have estimated in your first calculation was actually quite wrong.
Now, according to the DG, we've been seeing this downtrend of COVID-19 ICU admissions in the Klang Valley area for hospitals. What can you tell us about this and what it means for the capacity of our healthcare system?
Well, the one thing that's good is that the numbers that's being reported, regardless whether it's 90% or 60%, we know that there is a high number of people who are actually in the high-risk group. So these are people with comorbids, people who are above 60. So these were the people who actually got the first vaccines. And these are the people who we are seeing a downward trend of getting themselves hospitalized. So we see that the vaccines are actually working. So the numbers of people needing ICU care is on a decline in the Klang Valley. Yet, we have to be sure that whatever happens from now on, we got to make sure that people who are not yet receiving the vaccines do not get the virus, because they also may end up in the ICU and we have another research. And that's something that we have to avoid.
So you mentioned earlier breakthrough cases, and I think that this is something that a lot of people are concerned about. It's certainly a question that recurs whenever we open up the lines. So could you help us better understand what breakthrough cases actually are?
So breakthrough cases, if you look at it from definition, is that you have to make sure that the person who's been diagnosed as COVID positive is a person who has completed the vaccine according to the schedule and have passed the 2 weeks interval period after the second dose of vaccination, if it's a two-dose vaccine. So for one dose, it's different. So these are people who have gotten the full vaccination and after they have been so-called have these neutralizing antibodies in their body, they are still infected with COVID. However, we need to draw the attention that even though this may be the case, and this may be the case for a long time coming, that these people, the majority of them, do not end up being hospitalized, which means that they're asymptomatic in the Category 1 or with mild symptoms in Category 2. Now, that is what is supposed to be important. That should be the message that we have to give out to the people so that we get more people to be vaccinated.
So one of the points of contention that has been raised by listeners on the show before has been whether there is enough transparency about cases or the numbers in general and in breakthrough cases in particular. How would you respond?
Well, honestly, I think I will be on their side, and I think we still need more transparency and we still need more data to be shared with us. For me, the first thing that's really important is that as much as the day cases are being reported to us daily, category 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, it shows a reflective number on the number of cases that's being reported on that day. But we know that categories 2 or 3 can develop into 4 and 5 tomorrow or the day after. And I think that is a more pertinent number. We need to know exactly today how many are in total into category 5, not just based on what is the number today from that what is being reported. So absolutely, we need more transparency so that people can actually understand. And on the breakthrough cases, I think we need to actually be telling people in this type of breakthrough cases which vaccinations are being or which vaccines we are seeing breakthrough cases for and all these things. Because I think it's not about scaring the public regarding the vaccinations that they have received. Rather, it's about educating people so that we may be able to prime them. Perhaps later, when we're talking about booster doses and such, people already know why booster doses are needed. So I think this is something that we must look at it as trying to educate the public rather than scaring the public.
Now, the other concern, especially with school starting next month, is that of children and their safety. So when we look at this number of the adult population being vaccinated in the Klang Valley and the assumption or the working number of it being 80 to 90%, how much protection does that offer for children?
Well, I think number one, first thing we have to address the elephant in the room. The first thing is I think they wanted to open up the schools in October, if I'm not mistaken. And you want to open up and you want to close down back in November because school holidays are then. So I think why should you risk opening schools for 6 weeks since the kids have been at home for the past God knows how many months. So I think why risk it while the data is still coming in on those kids who can actually get vaccinated ages 12 to 17. I think the more pertinent step and what we should be focusing on is trying to see whether we can actually vaccinate kids who are 17 years old, 16 years old. Because if you ask me, from a physiological and a medical point of view, there's not much difference between a 17-year-old kid and an 18-year-old kid. But there is a big difference in the type of education they're seeing, which means that the 17 years old, which is in Form 5, if these people can get vaccinated, they can actually go to school and they can actually get face-to-face teaching from vaccinated teachers. And it will actually help them develop for their answers during the SPM when they go for the exams. So we have to look at this in a more holistic approach rather than just trying to be popular and just saying, oh, we want the kids to go back to school because that's what is needed. But rather, when we want to do something, we have to do it in the most safest manner possible, because I think it's going to be very counterintuitive when we open and close, open and close, open and close, because it's just going to make a lot of people fed up and I think, quite honest, just pissed off.
So I think if we take a step back, right, from the NRP and just look at it generally, are there benchmarks that you would like us to be looking at when it comes to a further loosening of restrictions?
Well, number one, I think the NRP is pretty flawed from the get-go. I think the first thing that we have to remove is the phases, because the phases mean nothing, especially now when you don't actually follow the phases at all. So when you don't follow the phases at all, people will see that there is no solid form of parameters that needs to be addressed. Number two, what needs to be done in NRP is that whatever decisions or what we call regulations that are in place needs to be dynamic, because the pandemic is dynamic. We see that there is a curve when it goes high, when it goes low. Definitely when it's low, you have loosening of restrictions. When it's high, you have to be tighter and all these things. We've seen this in a lot of the countries that's happening. So I think we need to tie it based on factors which are important to us, such as bed occupancy, such as the numbers of those in category 4 and 5, and then such as our public healthcare facility, rather than just basing in on absolute number of cases. Because at one point, we have to understand that COVID is endemic. It will be among us. So don't tell me that you're going to be changing the numbers again and again to fit your NRP, which is in one time mode, which means that it's only forward looking and you cannot go back. So it makes people confused. And at this time, at this stage of the pandemic, where people are facing pandemic fatigue, they need something that is clear and concise. So for me, just make it as simple as possible. Just tell people exactly what's going to happen if these cases cost this much, if the cases are like this, if there is a building with a high number of cases, we should probably lock down that building. So it's something that is very targeted, very specific. And why does it need to be like that, Lynn? It's because the more targeted and the more specific you are, the lesser you have an impact on the surrounding communities and the people. So let's say KLCC has an outbreak. You may need only to close down KLCC, but the surrounding areas might function as normal. There's no point if you have a high number of cases, you use absolute numbers as your indicator and you lock down the entire Kuala Lumpur. So it's not going to bring any benefit both to the people or the economy. So that's why I think the NRP needs to be changed. And I think because of the new or what we can say, a refreshed government, I think it's time we hit the reset button and try to relook at the NRP from the whole get-go.
Dr. Phan, you pointed out much earlier on that essentially even those of us in Phase 1 states have a lot of freedoms already. So on a personal level, what should we be considering when we're trying to decide whether spaces are safe to be in right now? What should, you know, is there a checklist, for example?
Well, number one, I think I'll be honest with you. I'm actually at a shopping center right now because I wanted to get some grocery goods. But yet I'm already seeing some parents bringing in their kids. And some of them are quite small and they're unable to put on their mask because it's understandable that it's very irritable when you do that. But yet, I think that you have to look at it. Is it worth bringing these kids to these indoor spaces knowing that indoor places have an 18-time higher risk compared to being outside? So if you need to bring your kids outside, perhaps you go to an open space. If you want to dine in, find a restaurant that has al fresco dining so that they can actually have good ventilation. And then I think you should just forget about following the NRP phase 1, phase 2, or phase 3. Rather, you have to look at it and assess it for yourself. If you think that a certain place has a high risk of getting COVID, there's a crowding, you are unable to practice social or physical distancing, you should take that onus and not go into that area. And you should practice your masking and hand sanitizing for your own good rather than because it's being enforced. And then I think when you go out somewhere, rather go out with purpose, so that when you go out, you know exactly what you're going to do so that you limit the time that's outside. So echoing what the DG has stated, the opening up of the economy is not because it's safe, but because the economy really needs it. So when you look at it, you have to start protecting yourself regardless whatever regulations is being imposed by the government.
We do have a WhatsApp message from a listener, Subra, who wants to know, can the doctor clarify whether a fully vaccinated person who gets infected and is asymptomatic, would that person be infectious?
Well, it depends. See, this is something that is very, it's something very a bit more complicated to explain in a minute or two. The person can be infectious, but the risk of the person being infectious is extremely low, although that person can still transmit that virus to someone else. However, if a person is actually fully vaccinated, is wearing a mask, and another person who's vaccinated wearing a mask meets each other, the risk of transmission is extremely low compared to when both of them were not vaccinated. So there are still some parameters that still plays in this. And we are seeing that they can actually transmit and actually be infectious. And that's the reason why, even though you're fully vaccinated, you still have to undergo the 40-day quarantine as mandated by the government, because we do not want to take the risk of you infecting other people.
In terms of enforcement, is there anything else that you'd like to see being done at the moment to ensure that SOPs are followed?
Well, I think the most important thing is that when we talk about SOPs, I think a lot of people already know what has to be done on a personal level. Rather, I think what we need is a more systematic policy in the way things are being run. So I understand the need for restaurants to open, but I think there must be some sort of regulation, especially on proper and good ventilation, because I cannot stress how extremely important this factor actually is. Because we know that if a super spreader event actually occurs in a non-well or a very poor ventilated area and it's indoor, we know that they can infect a lot of people. So I think when we start to open up economies, when we start to open up plans, our policy needs to be changed. And we also see that there is a very high risk of people getting infected among migrant or workers who are in factories, who live such close proximity because they are unable to actually follow the Act 446. On the good housing practices. So I think we need to go and look at it from that strategic level if you want to solve the problem on the ground, rather than just waiting for someone in front with a thermometer trying to tell them, oh, because you don't have a high fever, you are in and you're safe. I think these things are very minute. It doesn't really solve the bigger problem and the bigger issue. And I think the bigger issue actually starts from policy and actually proper and effective governance.
Dr. Phan, just briefly, is there a message you'd like to leave us with?
Well, I think because tomorrow is going to be our National Day, Merdeka, I hope that we see it as freedom of knowledge of mind rather than saying that we need to be free from COVID, because COVID is going to be with us. It's going to be something that is going to be endemic and it's going to be very, very long. We do not know what strains or what variants are going to come in the future, but rather we have to be prepared in case no matter what happens, we know how to take care of ourselves. And the freedom that we gain is something that we must actually respect and try to protect it. So protect yourself, protect others, and ensure that you get yourself vaccinated and get everybody else to get vaccinated as well.
Dr. Phan, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much, Liz. Take care.
You too. That was Dr. Farhan Rusli, Director of the Selangor Task Force for COVID-19 Operations, weighing in essentially on the fact that the Prime Minister has said there's a possibility that the Klang Valley will be moving on to phase two of the National Recovery Plan. So we did establish, I think, why perhaps the recovery plan is not the best not the best parameters to be using, but nevertheless, if it does happen, we may see a further loosening of restrictions in the Klang Valley. We'd like to hear your thoughts on that. Do you think we're ready? That number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.